When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 2, Dobby's Warning.
I've been waiting with bated breath. Is that even the phrase? Do people say bated breath? Anyway, yeah. You closed last week's episode and you were like, I don't like the chapter art for Dobby's Warning, and I want your full critique. Go.
Man, I'm sure you could point out all the things I can. First of all, Dobby looks one just like a little too, I don't know, like cute or like clean
cared
or something
for and such. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I'm sorry. Is he holding a hat?
A hat.
Because he is. He's holding a hat and he's wearing shoes. Which, like, what is that? It's like insult to injury, salt in the wound. The whole thing with house elves is that they aren't given clothes, and he has two separate pieces of clothing besides the pillowcase that have been given to him. Like, he should not have shoes. He should not have a hat. He should not look so, like,
expertly cared for.
Even his pillowcase doesn't look properly ragged. I mean, I don't like it. I think it's a misrepresentation, and it feels like they didn't read the chapter.
To be honest with you, it didn't even occur to me that Dobby is holding like garments.
He's holding clothing
that would clearly indicate. I also found I found a description of the etymology of the name Dobby.
Oh, did you?
Well, and here's the thing. I'm going to say that I discovered this, but then I tried to fact check it and couldn't find it anywhere else. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the rough idea is that the Dobby actually refers to a kind of elf that once upon a time would come out like in the middle of the night to like tend to chores about your house.
Oh.
And such kinds of elves, so you wouldn't even call them elves, you would call them Dobbies.
Oh.
Would or could be set free, I believe, if you granted them shoes.
Interesting.
So it is kind of funny that this particular illustration is depicted wearing shoes. But to be fair, the other thing that I found was that a Dobby is a, and maybe it's going for like a Dobbin, I'm not sure, but like a small like loom type device, like a way of like weaving together fabrics.
Okay.
Which I sort of thought was interesting because eventually Dobby makes his own socks.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of fun. But I now that you are giving me some of your explanation, I do see it more. I otherwise find it to be I think house elves are creatures that in execution, it's hard to do in a way that doesn't like maybe look uncanny or creepy or something.
Sure.
And I don't think that it looks like either of those, but it does look like a much more well tended to house elf than what is described in chapter.
Yeah. It's not like it's a badly drawn picture. It's just doesn't reflect Dobby.
No, I understand. I spent the entire time reading the chapter, and like half of my brain was like in the background, just being like, "Why does Jay dislike this image so much? I'm so curious."
There you go. Now you know there why. There we go.
Okay, so not Jay's favorite image, but anyway, so Dobby's Warning is kind of a very curious chapter. You could probably pose somewhat of a philosophical question, a la like Wally and the sentiment of like, "I don't want to survive. I want want to live.
Yeah.
You know, to the entire Dobby paradox, which is that Dobby is trying so hard and respects Harry so much and is so flattered by the way that Dobby is going to be treated by Harry as effectively just an equal entirely, something yeah. that he's so not used to. And yet his whole mission is to undermine basically everything that Harry loves.
Basically.
And
in the name of protecting Harry.
Yes, in the name of protecting Harry.
But not from himself.
right, yeah. Dobby can harm Harry however Dobby sees fit.
Right, okay. Dobby can break your arm, all right? You're not dead by a basilisk.
Right.
You're
right,
welcome.
Yes, exactly.
Who cares if you live in solitary confinement in the upstairs of the Dursleys for the rest of your life, you know?
Right.
At least you won't be dead.
At least you won't be dead. But, you know, I think this is one of those classic examples where Dobby's best of intentions are probably like ill-considered or something. What am I trying to find here? What are the words I'm looking for? But like, I mean, it's just ultimately, I think it ends up being really good and interesting for the overall plot. But Dobby's whole mission is slightly misguided at best.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Beginning.
But I still love Dobby very much. But
of course,
this chapter also really, I think, shines a light on just how much I love Harry as well.
Yeah.
Because I love the way that basically, like, as far as Harry is concerned, he has just endured quite the day. I mean,
there's no doubt.
What
he's painting benches. He's mowing lawns.
He's washing cars. Trimming rose bushes. Mm-hmm. Like he's just doing this, that, and the other on top of it. He's exhausted. All he's had is two slices of bread and a lump of cheese to eat. He's absolutely supposed to go and very easily appease the Dursleys by essentially going to his bedroom and making no noise for the rest of the evening when he stumbles across effectively an intruder in his space.
Yeah.
Who he is then nothing but absolutely polite to the whole time.
Oh, I know. And despite how like nice he is to Dobby and how much Dobby is like, "You're so great, Harry Potter," Dobby is just like, "Yeah, I'm going to ruin your day real quick."
Yes.
But the very first thing he does, he says he wanted to ask, "What are you?" but thought it would sound too rude. So instead he said, "Who are you?" And it's like just right out of the gate, the politeness to treat him just as an individual instead of like a creature is like his first instinct.
Right. Like his instinct was exactly the word I was going to use or in the exact right place. Like this is somebody who is like attempting, he's in an unknown situation and still trying to find the correct way to find his footing.
Yeah.
Which is what you want there. And then he asks him to sit down. He apologizes to him. He says, "I didn't mean to offend you or anything." "Offend Dobby," choked the elf.
Dobby has never been asked to sit down by a wizard like an equal. Like, never asked to sit down. Never once at the Malfoys. But like, "Dobby, have a seat." Like, oh boy.
I know. Yeah, that's just, it's
a long life.
It's the type of thing where it's like, I can't imagine how uncomfortable it would be to live an existence where you're actively needing to summon enough anger in your person to be rude to a creature who lives in your house at all times, like just so you can continuously disrespect them.
I know. Like, it just seems like it seems like most people would have more of like an affectionate kind of relationship with an elf.
I mean, it's like, and there's no good way to slice house elves. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's not a good situation in the first place, but like, it's one of those things where at bare minimum, like this is something that is ultimately providing like a positive, I don't know, like, service. It all makes me very uncomfortable.
I know. I guess maybe what it boils down to is that really the only people who would be okay with like having a slave are just intrinsically bad people.
Sure.
There's like that layer to it. Like if there was like an affectionate relationship, they'd just be free.
That's true.
Right.
Then that's
or
just,
they just pay just, them.
Just show
or,
them respect. Yeah. Let them be paid employees.
The other thing is that like house elves.
That's such a good point. Like, you're right. Like the very nature of owning one in the first place is like, that's the
marker. That's already the problem.
Yeah.
Right. Because like the other thing about house elves that is just like the extra layer of ick on it is that all of the stuff they do, it's like filch. It's like they have to do like this sort of manual labor stuff or stuff that's magic. And it's like, it, you can already do magic, you know, like the, like the Weasleys don't have a house elf, and it's like, oh, we need to clean up. It's like wave wand done.
Yes,
you know,
it's yes,
like, there's,
yes, yes.
There's like almost like they do chores, but like chores are not a problem in the wizarding world.
Right. Right.
Like the kind of stuff they're doing is like, and it also just seems like they must, the one thing that I would love to have done at my house is laundry, but that's like the one thing they can't do
because that would
involve giving them clothing.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yep. No, this is kind of interesting because I think for a little while there, we went down this like total rabbit hole of like the economics of the wizarding world and how like a galleon, if it is in fact made of solid plated gold, just simply, if you were to compare it to like a British pound, we sort of like mathed it out, but like any single galleon in at least US dollars would translate to approximately like $2,000 of like, of value in just in terms of like the pure gold.
Right.
But then the entire wizarding, you know, economic system is so very different from anything you can ever imagine because they have magic and magic can solve most of their problems. So it's right. Like you don't need to go and you don't even need to be marketed a new blender because you can just do you can do whatever a blender can accomplish on your own.
Right.
You know, and so it's like you don't need to like, it's like one of those things where it's like where like the Weasleys are poor, but it's like, but the same way, like, but they're just not like because they like, I mean, well, I guess like from like a dollar's perspective, if you want to like compare like the life to
like the Weasleys are rich in the ways that count.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Like, you know, they're able to do all the things that they need to do. And I think what it comes down to is that it's like maybe that translates more to like the materialistic side of things.
Well, this is the other layer of ick on house elves is that like Ron at one point says like, oh, whoever it belongs to, it'll come from, they come with like big wizarding mansions or whatever.
Right.
So it's like the other weird part about it is like all of the families that actually would have them are also families that have like tons of galleons to spare.
Oh, sure.
You know, like yes, it would be so easy to pay them.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So just whole thing. The other thing is that like they also just seem extremely magical. Like I would be very interested to know what the history of house elves is that like they became enslaved at some point.
It does
like
seem,
what happened.
Yes, yeah. It seems really strange. Like you're exactly right. Like it feels like there could be like a really like an origin story could be applied to whatever the circumstances, because it does seem like it's kind of like what we said in last week's episode. We were talking about like Dobby's ability to stop all the letters or to interfere with the bludger or to block the barrier between platform 9 3/4. Like the things that he's pulling off are rather significant feats of magic. Even if you want to fast forward to Deathly Hallows, like nobody else can disapparate in or out of Malfoy Manor, but like Dobby can.
But Dobby still can. It's like elf disapparation is different than wizard disapparation in some way, I
right,
guess.
Right, yes. Yeah, exactly. So it definitely seems like whatever they can do is rather remarkable, and we see that on display. But then the other thing is that their limitations, at least in terms of the ones that they have kind of had like imbibed into their way of seeing the world, which is that if they were to say anything negative about their masters, which is exactly what's happening to Dobby here, which is just basically that like Harry says, "You can't have met many decent wizards," said Harry, trying to cheer him up. Dobby shook his head. Then without warning, he leapt up and started banging his head furiously on the window, shouting, "Bad Dobby, bad Dobby." So the thing I find kind of interesting about this is that like clearly Dobby has this like extreme inner struggle where it's like he's there for a reason. He's there trying to protect Harry. He's trying to do the right thing. And yet he still can't really speak counter to like the Malfoys.
He can't even say who they are, apparently.
Yes, he can't even, right, correct. But like the thing that blows my mind is that he was even able to successfully make it to Privet Drive in the first place.
And apparently has been able to make it there a bunch to intercept the letters all year.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, what kind of blows my mind is like, what must Dobby's like loopholes or like, what is he figuring out as like ways that like what he is doing is both still following whatever orders the Malfoys have given him, like by being here in the first place, like, if he can't say something negative about the Malfoys, I can't believe he could get there. So how has he been able to figure out how to get there?
I know. Well, it's like if you go to like Order of the Phoenix, there's like one where like, you know, Sirius is just wants Creature to get out of the room and is like, get out. And like Creature is able to like loophole his way into that, meaning he can like leave the house altogether.
That's
to
true.
Go talk to Narcissa and Bellatrix.
That's a good point. That's a
so
good
it's
point.
Like it could yeah. be something very similar to like that, or Els Dahbi is just straight up breaking the rules.
Yeah, which is possible. The thing, I don't know why it reminds me of this, but there was that challenge when we were like in elementary school where they would like make you do the like you had to write the directions down on how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Right.
And then like you would get in front of the class and like, you know, you don't realize how intense the teacher is going to be about this particular assignment, but like she will stand there or he will stand there with their like all the supplies, you know, so there's like a butter knife and a peanut butter jar and a jelly jar and like a loaf of bread in a bag, and you have to write down like reach forward and place your hands on the bag, undo the twist tie,
right,
open the plastic bag, reach your hand in and remove a slice of bread,
right,
you know, but like most people just jump to like pull a slice of bread out, and then like, you know, the teacher would stand there and like poke their hands at the bag and be like, how?
Yeah, like can't do it.
Right.
Need instructions.
Right. So like I almost wonder if this is like house elf logic, where like everything is very like literal to the tune of like exactly like you just said, like get out. It's like, okay.
Yep. There you go.
I will get out of this room and the entire house.
Right.
And while I'm out of this house, the thing I'm not supposed to be able to do, I can go and do the thing that I do want to do.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay, here you go. He even says, sometimes they remind me to do extra punishments. Maybe when they remind him to do extra punishments, he's like, I'll go break some rules and then I'll have to do extra punishments.
Oh, like, you know? yes. I like that. No, yeah. That's really good. Like, so what he's doing is like, okay, if you need me to do extra punishments, no problem whatsoever. I will go and break the necessary rules in order to merit the necessary punishments, because it, like, otherwise it would be that exactly that type of like,
right.
like way too literal situation. It's like, well, I haven't done anything wrong, so I need to do something wrong. Oh, that's fun. I totally think
I do
that's
like
it.
That.
Yeah. I mean, it's awful in the first place, but
yes.
Once again, it's the dark forces, like, They're upending themselves
yeah.
always. Yeah,
always. Like,
they're their own worst enemy.
Yeah. There's a sentence here that says, this makes the Dursleys sound almost human. I love this is like a constant thing where it's like, there's always like Dudley being Harry's bully, and then there's like Malfoy being way worse than Dudley. And it's just like, yep, this continues to be true.
Yes,
like,
indeed.
Like, however bad you think the Dursleys are, boy, do the Malfoys suck.
yes, indeed. And that's like literally what I wrote down is like, well, I mean, I wrote down like the Malfoys and the Dursleys are not that different, but I think it's interesting that it's because like in both cases what you've quite literally got is somebody who is being so spoiled to a fault that they have like it's like you can't there's the scene where Dumbledore arrives in Half-Blood Prince to collect Harry to go and do the mission with Slughorn, and inside of that particular mission Dumbledore makes a comment where he's like, the irreparable damage you've done to the boy sitting between you regarding to like Petunia and Vernon basically flanking either side of Dudley, and they're all looking at each other like thinking like, when was the last thing we ever did that was mean to Dudley?
Right.
And Dumbledore's whole point is that it's like you have like robbed him of the ability to like, you know, learn for himself,
right,
and, you know, build his own self-esteem, and like everything you've done is like built this like weird existence around him,
right?
He's like, you're not doing him any favors, you know.
Yeah, like you think you're helping him, but you're just making it worse.
Right. Yep. So, but I think that basically ends up being exactly the case with Draco as well.
Absolutely. Yep. Moving on, there's a line where Harry says, please be quiet. If the Dursleys hear anything, if they can't know you're here. And Dobby says, Harry Potter asks if he can help Dobby. Dobby has heard of your greatness, sir, but of your goodness, Dobby never knew. And I think this is very intentionally in here because it's like the opposite of what Ollivander says when Harry gets his wand,
He
says like, you know, oh, we must expect great things from you. After all, he who must not be named was great, terrible, but great. And this is like, oh, but Harry is great, but good.
Yes. That's exactly it. And Dobby is just like completely hitting, you know, the nail on the head with that one. And then I actually like the very next sentence as well, because in reaction to it, Harry says, Whatever you've heard about my greatness is a load of rubbish. I'm not even top of my year at Hogwarts. That's Hermione. She, and then he kind of trails off because thinking about Hermione makes him sad. But I like this because once this is like Harry holds true to this. Like he's so aware of how great Hermione is as a student to the point where, again, if you fast forward to the Slughorn conversation in Half-Blood Prince, it's the exact same thing. Like he's like, my best friend's a muggle and she's topping our year, or muggle born and she's topping our year. So anyway, I always love the praise for Hermione from Harry as just like a, you know, quiet from afar.
There it is. Not a Hermione shippers over here.
No big deal. We don't need to worry about that. We don't need to get into it. No big deal. That's not what we're going for or anything, but you know, love that. And then of course the exact same thing happens with Ron, like not 5 seconds later where Harry goes to reference Ron. And then once again, it's just too painful because he now has to think about how he hasn't talked to Ron all summer. And apparently Ron has forgotten about him, except he totally hasn't, because Dobby has been stealing all the letters.
Okay, so there is something interesting in there. He says, Dobby says, Dobby heard tell, he said, or said that Harry Potter met the Dark Lord for a second time just weeks ago, and that Harry Potter escaped again. So that's true. But then one page later, this is, I found this pretty interesting. It was that, is when Dobby is like trying to tell Harry about why he can't go back to Hogwarts. And he says, there is a plot, Harry Potter, a plot to make most terrible things happen at Hogwarts of Witchcraft School, School of Witchcraft and Wizardry this year. Dobby has known it for months, sir. Which to me is really interesting because it means that Harry and all the like Sorcerer's Stone shenanigans that went down with the mirror and Quirrell happened just weeks ago, but that Lucius Malfoy has been planning this Chamber of Secrets like plot for months, like way before any of that went down.
Yeah, that's like,
true. He's been like, I don't know, this is a very clear like Draco, you know, wait till my father hears about this. And it's like, well, he's heard.
He has been
plotting like well in advance of even learning that, like, oh, Voldemort was at the school.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like this was already in motion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is also kind of interesting because, well, for one, because I highlighted the Dobby has known it for months, sir. And I wrote the note next to it, which was just simply, it's not a very elaborate plan. Like,
I know,
you know, it's like, I'm going to have to work on this for months. How will I find myself in a position to plant a diary on a student going back to school?
Let me wonder out loud so my elf can hear me.
Yes, exactly. I just imagine Lucius like in his study, just sort of like pacing back and forth, attempting to like put together this evil plot.
Yeah.
Which he must think is quite profound.
Absolutely. You know. So then Dobby continues to be just the worst informant in the world, though. He's like, this is just such a pointless warning. He's like, you can't go back. There's a plot to make bad things happen. What's going to happen? Who's doing it? Like, Harry asks all of the obvious questions, and Dobby's like, I can't tell you any of that. No, why would you need reasons? Just believe me. I'm a weird elf that showed up in your room.
Yes, the ambiguous messenger. I wrote down in response to that. Basically, it's so helpful to the overall plot that he can't answer this question.
Yeah,
because otherwise it would just sort of be like, you know, my master's the Malfoys, and then it would just sort of be like, oh, okay, the Malfoys are behind it.
Well, then even this, Harry's just like, wait. It's not Voldemort, is it? And Dobby, or he who must not be named. And Dobby's like, not he who must not be named. And it's like, this drives me crazy. Because like Harry just immediately guesses the right answer. And she's like, oh, how bad are we talking? Like Voldemort bad? Dobby's just like, not Voldemort, Tom Riddle, sir, Tom Riddle. And it's just like, dude, first of all, like it's the same person. You're being really vague on purpose here. Like he got the right answer. Just wow. Also why he says not he who must not be named is because it's Tom Riddle, not Lord Voldemort. And one, I think it's crazy that Dobby knows Voldemort's identity.
Well, I mean, I guess if he knows that it's Tom Riddle's diary, like that could be the case. But even that would be kind of interesting. I'm partially surprised maybe at your interpretation as well, because I think part of my mind was that he's saying like not he who must not be named, like because it's like not so much directly, but maybe somebody who was like his follower.
He's talking about Lucius?
Sort of Lucius. But the other thing that I just find to be interesting, and it was the way that you phrased it that made me hear it this way, is that it comes across and is clearly written as a stammer, but it's also a double negative. It's not not he who must not be named.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
You know, so it's like, that to me, I think, could be clever writing, where it's sort of like, when you go back and look at it, it's like, is it he who must not be named? It's like, well, it's not he who must not be named, wink.
Well, I think Harry asks about this later. He's like, you said it wasn't Voldemort, and he says, I said it was, or he says, like, it was a hint, it was a clue, Harry Potter, a clue, or something.
Dobby was being helpful, sir. Dobby was being,
you get it, you see?
Yeah.
It wasn't he who must not be named.
Right. Yeah, so that's the big question, because if Dobby thinks it's Tom Riddle, that would suggest that anybody other than Dumbledore knew that Voldemort's true identity was Tom Riddle. But if Lucius has the diary, and I'm pretty sure it has the inscription that it belongs to Tom Riddle.
I think it has his name like on the outside.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, but I can't tell if I'm blurring that with like the movie prop. I know we own a movie prop that says Tom Riddle on
it. You're right. Or maybe it says on the inside. Even so, Lucius must have looked.
It's almost certainly. Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, how could Dobby know?
Right. Do you think Lucius ever wrote in the diary?
Oh, boy. I guess not.
Well, clearly because he's announcing all of his
maybe he must have. I don't know. Because he knows it will open the chamber of secrets, which I guess Voldemort could have just told him, but
it seems a little unlike Voldemort to trust him with that level of information.
It does. It does seem a little.
But I can't tell. At this point, as a reader, so if you go back to like, you know, like 10-year-old me reading this book or whatever, 12-year-old me, I still see Lucius as formidable. Now, as an adult who's read the story a million times, I'm like, Lucius is a moron.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not that impressive.
Right.
Like, he has wealth, but he's like, I never think of Lucius himself as being terribly powerful or even capable.
Not really.
He was just like, well, like he just has resources, basically.
Yeah, basically. He's just a money pit. The question, did Lucius write in the diary? That is a very interesting question. I don't know.
That is an interesting question. Yeah, we'll have to keep that in mind as we kind of like trudge forward here on this one, because it'd be interesting to see if anything ever alludes to the idea that he knew exactly what would happen.
Yeah, or if like Voldemort told him it would open the chamber, or if he wrote in the diary and that's how he found out it would open it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We'll keep an eye out for the answer to that. Yeah. I also think it's interesting when we get a little bit further down this page that Dobby refers to Dumbledore as the greatest headmaster Hogwarts has ever had. Dobby knows it, sir. Dobby has heard Dumbledore's powers rival those of he who must not be named at the height of his strength. And it's like, it's weird to me that Dobby has this opinion of Dumbledore, because he would have spent his entire life in the Malfoy's house, and like that's not how they see Dumbledore. So like it doesn't seem like something they ever would have said.
Right. So how is Dobby able to surmise this particular opinion when he probably has never been presented with it?
Right. Like he couldn't have been exposed to this opinion, it seems like.
Right. Right. But that's the thing about Dobby that's really unique, is that he doesn't, like, you know, especially when you compare him to Creature, who has clearly like, well, and I mean, I guess what it must mean with Creature is that Sirius's mother must have treated Creature with enough respect that Creature took to her belief system.
Sure.
Which I guess is a little bit of a different story from what we have going on here with old Dobbert, as it were. But the thing that always blows my mind, about Dobby is that basically it's like, I mean, he really, like, he does think for himself. Like, I mean, he does seem to, you know, like make his own opinions and like whatever. Like it almost seems like, even as much as he's heard about Dobby, it's like, where from, you know, like
about Harry.
Yeah. Rather.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he knows about like his greatness, but not about his goodness.
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess,
well, I guess even, I guess eventually we know that Dobby knows Winky, like, right. Or do they just meet at Hogwarts? No, because they're trying to get a job together.
No, I think they meet at Hogwarts, because Dobby's employed at Hogwarts basically immediately, right?
It's not immediately.
Is it not?
No.
Okay.
Because he just sort of like disappears for book three and then comes back in book four.
Okay.
So like, right. It's, maybe there's some sort of like inter-house elf communication system or something.
Right. More information we can learn in that backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, I've got to say, I love international travel. I don't know if there's anything that opens your eyes and mind more to different walks of life than immersing yourself inside of new ones. But one hesitation I always have about going somewhere new is how to best navigate the differing languages. But that's where Rosetta Stone can help. Because for me, it's not just about like the fear of getting lost, although to be fair, it's not a concern either. But to me, the immersion goes so much further than simply being somewhere else. I want to engage with and respect the locale by communicating in their tongue, not my own. And that's what's so great about Rosetta Stone. They provide 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, and more. And they use such an intuitive approach designed for you to pick up the language naturally, so you're really learning to speak, listen, and the one I always find the most fascinating, think in a new language. And what's even better is that when you sign up, it's for life. Yeah, a lifetime membership. Because let's face it, we can only travel to so many new places, but so fast. But with all the time in the world, you can be ready for any adventures ahead. Don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Through the Gryffindor listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off your unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Through the Gryffindor is supported by Pair Eyewear. Y'all, I am so excited for our upcoming Through the Gryffin tour. It is going to be such a good time. But as ever, when you're going to be spending time in front of people, you want to be looking your darned best. And let me tell you what, Pair Eyewear has arrived just in the nick of time. Like, honestly, I was immediately blown away with my new frame. So let me walk you through exactly what they do. So starting at just $60, including your prescription, you can get your base frames, which are like sleek, modern, and stylish. But that is really just the start, because from there, you get to fully customize each frame, all of your looks, by simply snapping on the top frames. And they actually have an entire collection of Harry Potter frames. So like for the upcoming tour, I was so pumped. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to find some super cool Slytherin frames that I can like wear. But then as I was clicking around, I've been watching X-Men 97, which is like so good. And they actually had X-Men frames as well. And then May the 4th is coming up, or maybe by the time you're listening, it's already passed. But like they have a huge collection of over 20 Star Wars frames as well. So I had a very hard time narrowing, and I ended up getting two. I got the X-Men ones and I got some Slytherin ones. So many different like fandom frames you can choose from. And I never thought to accessorize my glasses with fandom stuff, but now you can. And it's so easy to change between them. Like they have little magnets on them, so you can just slap a different frame onto the front of your glasses and then easily switch it out. I've been doing it all day. It's so fun. And before you commit to anything, you can explore all the different possibilities with their virtual try-on. But again, the base frames for men, women, or kids. I think honestly kids would love this because you can just switch them out and they're so fun looking. They all start at $60. One pair, infinite possibilities. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code Gryffin for 15% off your first pair, and support the show by mentioning that Through the Gryffindor sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's PairEyewear.com, code Gryffin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One of the other things that we just jumped over just a little bit was that after Dobby says it's not he who must not be named, or not he who must not be named, Harry asks, he hasn't got a brother, has he? And I literally wrote, LOL, can you imagine?
There's Bob Riddle.
Well, what do you think he's like?
I know. He's just like a regular guy. Wouldn't that be crazy if like Tom Riddle Sr. just like married a muggle woman and had another child?
especially like, if they were like a wizard.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like some spicy fanfic.
It does. Over there. It does. Yeah. That would be, oh man, it'd be so interesting.
Oh yeah, if they were a wizard and it's just like, uh-oh.
I don't terribly hate it. I don't hate it. That feels like a string to pull on.
He hasn't got a brother, has he? Harry is sometimes good at predicting the future, so who knows?
He is, by mistake, of course. Let's see here. So then at this point in time, Let's see.
This is where Dobby reveals that he's got... Well, no. It's Uncle Vernon comes up in the room and is like, what the devil are you doing? And Harry's like, see why I've got to go back? It's the only place I've got. Well, I think I've got friends, which I just highlighted as like, what a weird thing to admit in the moment that you're like, I'm not sure if I have friends. Why are you telling him this?
I imagine Dobby just letting out like just staring at him, letting out like a long exhale, like... Well, that's something to unpack, bud.
Of course, Dobby, it's convenient for the conversation because Dobby knows that he's the culprit of this exact concern. It's just weird that Harry feels like open enough with Dobby to tell him he's concerned his friends have forgotten about him.
Right. Yep.
Maybe this is what happens when you're in solitary confinement for several days and you haven't heard from anyone and you're just like, man, maybe no one likes me.
Yeah. All right, Dobby, you're my new best friend.
You're my new best friend.
You've been appointed.
That's it.
But then, of course, this prompts Dobby to basically tilt his hand a little bit and say, friends who don't even write to Harry Potter. Dobby slyly. Yeah. Aha, my wait evil a minute. Scheme.
Yeah.
Wait a minute is literally what Harry says in reaction. This is where we discover that, of course, Dobby is the one who has been stopping all of the letters. And I do love the description of what Dobby has done. He says, Dobby hath them here, sir, said the elf. Stepping nimbly out of Harry's reach, he pulled a thick wad of envelopes from inside the pillowcase he was wearing. It's like a thick wad. Like, it makes me so happy at how many times.
Yeah.
Ron, Hermione, and Hagrid have actually been writing him.
Right.
You know, it's like he's so worried, and it's like, no. There's a bunch of these.
There's a bunch, yeah. But then he says, Harry Potter will have them, sir, if he gives Dobby his word that he will not return to Hogwarts. And at this point, like, Harry just keeps, like, refusing to agree to these terms. And I just wrote down, like, dude, just lie. Like, what do you owe the elf with your truth, you know?
I saved that for the next page, but I just wrote, like, what would happen if he just lied? And right. This is another one of those, like, I almost wonder if it's like an unbreakable vow type of thing, like, where, mm-hmm. where if, like, there's, or like an agreement with like a goblin or something, like, it's right. like there are special terms to these agreements,
right?
You know,
made a promise to an elf.
Yeah, like that to me doesn't feel beyond the realm of possibility.
Yeah, like, but even then, Harry wouldn't know that.
No, I agree. Yeah. Like, I mean, that would be Harry. Just, I mean, this is me injecting to the canon something that doesn't exist, and Harry also doesn't know. So largely, it all doesn't matter. But I don't hate the idea that this would be a thing.
Yeah.
And if Harry did it, in my mind, it's just sort of like, yeah. And then he'd be even more screwed. Then he couldn't go back.
Right.
He has to keep his word.
Right. Yeah. Like he's honor bound by elf code.
By elf code. Yep. I like it.
Yeah. So then Dobby goes downstairs and he. Gets Petunia's pudding. Says the pudding fell to the floor with a heart-stopping crash. I just highlighted that line because it's just like one of those random moments that I think is better in the movie where like Harry is like actively trying to go catch the pudding, but it ends up making it look like he drops it on Mrs. Mason's head.
Yep.
And it's just like, ooh, that's a great scene.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed. But then the very next page, this was another one that I thought was kind of interesting because it seems like the Masons are kind of reasonable people so far, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, it doesn't seem like this is necessarily what scared them away yet, because it says Uncle Vernon might still have been able to make his deal if it hadn't been for the owl.
Right.
So it's like, so far it's like the Masons have kind of entered this house. Some strange things have happened. A young Dudley has almost certainly lied to them about an essay he's written, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, yeah. the Uncle Vernon, I think, is telling some racist jokes.
There's Japanese golfer joke.
Yes. Don't look it up. Come on.
Have you looked it up?
No. Is it bad?
It's bad.
Okay. I don't want to know.
Yeah, I won't tell you, but yeah. You can look it up in your own time.
I feel, it's like one of those things where it's like, once I know, then I can't not know. And I'd rather just not know.
Just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, this was the thing that I was kind of curious about. I was like, I almost wonder if there's a theory to be written here somewhere, and I don't even know which dots to connect. But basically, so the pudding has gone downstairs. They're scooping ice cream deep out of the freezer as like the backup plan or whatever. And everything seems like it could still be salvageable until the owl flies in. And Mrs. Mason goes, it says, screamed like a banshee and ran from the house shouting about lunatics. Mr. Mason stayed just long enough to tell the Dursleys that his wife was mortally afraid of birds of all shapes and sizes, and asked whether this was their idea of a joke. And this is one of those
a joke. the punchline was ruined earlier, Mr. Mason, but have I got a joke for you?
Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah.
Let me grab your ear real quick. It feels oddly specific in a way that, like, I almost feel like is the reaction that I think Uncle Vernon might have if he was in a different situation and an owl flew into the room after everything he sort of endured the year prior when all the letters were arriving.
Yeah.
And Vernon's basically just like, you know, losing his wits a little bit in the process. So it almost makes me wonder if there's any possibility that the Masons themselves have also encountered countless owl deliveries of sorts.
Like do they have like a wizard? Oh, that'd be so interesting. God, is there there's no Masons at Hogwarts.
I know, it seems like the name would stand out.
It does, yeah, because of this exact thing.
Right, right.
That's interesting. Yeah, but
So I was trying to think if there's anything magical that could have happened. Or again, you know, I don't know how I keep flashing forward to Half-Blood Prince, but there is the instance. Oh, maybe it's happening. Maybe it's happening in real time in Half-Blood Prince, where like the Muggle Prime Minister's like aide or second in command or something thinks he's like a duck.
Is that a thing?
Isn't it something like that? Like,
yeah,
he's behaving in like a really kind of like
right.
an unusual
yeah.
way or something, and the Muggle Prime Minister's like he's just tired from all the campaigning, and it's like. He's not tired,
yeah. Right.
So it's like maybe somehow, it feels like Mrs. Mason has had a run-in with some kind of magic that has made her mortally afraid of all birds of all shapes and sizes, which is just a... I don't know. I just thought it was an oddly specific thing or very unfortunate if you're the Dursleys that this happens to be the case. Otherwise, it could have been quite interesting that an owl flew in and dropped an envelope on you.
I know. Yeah. Like, what if she wasn't afraid of birds? Like, was that an owl?
It's like, well, that was really cool. This place is interesting.
Yeah. Did it carry a letter? What's going on?
Does a letter say something cool?
Yeah.
What does it say? Is it a request for drill orders?
Yeah. Impressive, Vernon.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, the contents of the letter is so annoying to me. It says, "Dear Mr. Potter, we've received intelligence that a hover charm was used at your place of residence this evening at 12 minutes past 9. As you know, underage witches are not permitted to perform spells outside of school, and further spell work on your part may lead to expulsion." And it's just like, I hate everything about it. Like, the unfairness of the underage rule is so dumb. Like, they don't even know he did it. They're just, like, obviously they don't know who did it, because Harry didn't do it. And he's right. Just, it's like, immediately guilty until proven innocent. Like, there is no, like, it's not like someone shows up and is like, let's just check your wand real quick or something, which they can do. They can do.
Priori incantatum. Yeah,
they could just priori incantatum this and be like, whoops. Okay, what happened?
Right, right. Yes.
Dobby. What? Okay, that sounds like the Malfoys. Lucius Malfoy has a house elf named Dobby, right? Okay, we're going to have to talk to him about that.
Yes, exactly. You know, right? Like, it feels like this could have backfired on the right people so well if it was just handled differently.
Yeah, and it's just like, it is so annoying. Because then the next stage, like, Harry gets locked in his room or whatever, and he says, what was the good of magicking himself out of his room if Hogwarts would expel him for doing it? And it's just like, again, that you can't do magic away from school rule. Even that rule just doesn't make sense. Like, in this scenario, like, where Harry, like, the point of that rule is so that you don't break the statute of secrecy, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that Muggles don't find out about it. But, like, in the meantime, Vernon and Petunia already know about magic. So,
right.
Like, Harry doing magic isn't, like, letting anyone else in. It like makes no difference if he does it in the house, especially if it's something as innocuous as unlock a door. You know, it's not like they don't know.
Right. It feels to me like the system could break down so very quickly. Like, even just take, for example, like, what do Hermione's parents tell their friends about where Hermione goes to school.
Right.
You know, it's like, I mean, like they have no ill will, clearly, yeah. towards anybody in the wizarding world. Like, I don't think that they're remotely ashamed of Hermione for being a witch. Like, it seems like the type of thing where it'd be like, they would be excited to maybe tell their friends and family, or even like when Lily gets the letter, like the parents are so proud that there was a witch in the family.
Right. Like even if they say like, oh, we sent her to boarding school. It's like, where?
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah. It's like, would you care to elaborate on that? Like even at all? Like which one did you choose?
Because, I know.
Like, we're looking for our kids as well.
Right. Know? Or it's like, you know, or I mean, they're both dentists. They probably, you know, do pretty well for themselves. So like they I bet they have other friends whose kids go to boarding schools.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, oh, the same one our kid goes to? Or like we considered going there. It's just like boarding school abroad. Abroad.
Please don't ask more questions.
Don't ask questions we can't answer.
Yeah. But this would be an interesting one that wouldn't affect the Dursleys in any way, shape, or form. That would affect the Grangers, though, is whether or not, again, like there's any kind of magical Fidelius charm-esque piece of information, kind of similar to what we've applied to like the Sorting Hat before, where it's like, can Fred and George actually not tell Ron how the sorting goes because mm-hmm. there is like a charm on it so that like kids don't come into the sorting pre-prepared to attempt to like sway the hat one way or another.
Right.
Like what you need is the genuine, authentic experience of walking in for the first time, having no idea what was going to happen. If this was sort of similar to Muggle-born families where it's like they know that their child is a witch or wizard, but they can't share the information with anybody.
Right.
Which like wouldn't affect the Dursleys because they don't want to share the information with anybody. Right. But it would also mean that they were incapable of doing so even if they did want to.
Sure.
Which that could be kind of interesting.
It could be. Yeah, that could be something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that like just stops them from telling them.
And I don't really mean it for any reason other than like, you know, the statute of secrecy is so vitally important. And clearly, like, you know, there are plenty of students at school that are, in fact, Muggle-born, which just in some way in my mind presents like if this hover charm is such an issue, like it feels like there's a lot of liability attached to just any like the parents of any Muggle-born students.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's especially frustrating about this particular situation is that like the hover charm gets noticed by the ministry as a spell done by Harry, but like the apparating doesn't.
Oh yeah, that's, you know, true. Yeah.
Like shouldn't yeah. Because, and I mean, we've already sort of even talked about in this episode that like elf apparition is different than wizard apparition, but like true. Clearly elf hover charms are the exact same as wizard hover charms because that registered. But it's like, if it was an apparition, then it like they should immediately be able to know it's not Harry,
right?
You know, like because Harry can't do it. And yeah, it's like, and right, right, Dobby's right. apparently been doing this all summer outside the house and like doing something to stop the owls, apparently not magically.
Oh my gosh. Dobby's
tackling the owls.
He's like on the gutter, like just like free falling off. Oh my gosh. I know, it's so true. Yeah. So I don't know. That's a good point as well. Because yeah, I mean, this is the thing about the whole the trace is that it does feel like it's wonky in its rules at best.
Yeah.
And
it absolutely is.
It largely seems like it's like one of those things where it's like, what we really need to do is find a way to tie one arm behind Harry's back while he's home
yeah.
for the summer.
That feels like the real purpose of it. Also not for nothing, if Dobby actually just wanted to stop, like force Harry not to go to school, all he had to do was come back the next night and do another hover charm, you know?
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
And then, like, guess what? Now you're expelled.
That's it. Enjoy.
We'll never be able to prove it otherwise.
Yes. Yes. other tiny little Easter egg. About this, it's not really an Easter egg, but Mafalda Hopkirk is the one who the letter is automated yes. from. This is the person that Hermione ends up polyjuicing during the ministry heist in Deathly Hallows.
Yes.
I have always just found to be particularly interesting that it's sort of like there's even a piece of it like where when they discover like, oh, I am Mafalda Hopkirk, like Harry could have been like, you.
Well, she's also the one who it's so funny. Yeah, Mafalda Hopkirk's like job at the Improper Use of Magic office is like a good bit of continuity throughout the books.
It is. Yeah.
I think she's also the one, or the letter is also signed by her for the use of the Patronus charm
yes.
when the Dementor show up too.
Yes.
So it's yep. like she does show up a few times. It's just like, like, oh, it's just good. It's good that you were consistent in that.
I know. She, you know what? She's doing her career well.
Yeah. Well, she's obviously she's not even there. This is clearly automated because it's 9:12 at night.
I know. Yeah. That was the other thing I kind of wondered about was like, what technology or it like even magic is in place that this was able to be like orchestrated and delivered so swiftly?
Yeah. Right.
You know,
like somewhere at the ministry, it was like a quill was like, whoops, time to accuse somebody.
Yes.
It's like Mafalda's going to walk into work the next morning and be like, all right, who did we expel last? Who did I expel last night?
You yes, know? Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, oh dear. What? Harry Potter. Oh.
Whoops. We should. Yeah. Even that. It feels like she should have walked in and been like, that's probably not good.
Yeah. It's like, we should hang on. I need to talk to somebody.
I should look into this one.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can't expel him.
Right.
But either which way, once again, as I brought it up so many times, this threat of expulsion versus like the threat for Harry's life continues to be such a prominent worry for the first half of the series, where later all we have to do is worry about him being killed.
You know what is crazy is that Harry is constantly worried about being expelled for these like minor infractions, like being out of school or being out of bed in the middle of the night. Meanwhile, like Umbridge is there for the entire year and never expels him.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
Like
yeah.
At any moment she could just be like, see ya.
Yeah, and she would have loved to as yeah. well. So
right. Like somehow she can't come up with a reason to do it, despite punishing him in many other ways.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we scoot forward a little bit though, Harry's punishment is deplorable. He
yes.
they put bars on his bedroom window, they fit a cat flap to the bedroom door so that small amounts of food could be put in a few times a day. They let Harry out to use the bathroom morning and evening. I just wrote after this, they could legit be arrested for this.
I mean, it's genuine torture. It's just solitary confinement.
Yes, and like imprisonment.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So it's like, you know, this is like one of those where if there was any way to just like flag somebody down from there, it's like, well, you can just get the Dursleys. I mean, they could just solve that problem.
Right.
Yeah.
It feels like, yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is the other part is it's like he feels like so trapped, like, well, I can't magic myself out of the room because then I'll be expelled. But it's like, but otherwise you're just stuck in the room.
Yeah.
And then you're also not going, which is as good as expelled.
Yeah, it's because it sounds like at present, I'm pretty sure Vernon actually says specifically that he is not going back.
Yeah.
So, he says exactly that. He says, I'm locking you up. You're never going back to that school. Never. And if you try and magic yourself out, they'll expel you. So, I don't know. Maybe the words are just trying to trap Harry in the room for just long enough until we get yet another of two for two. In this book,
yeah,
so far.
Cliffhangers,
a cliffhanger ending, which I absolutely love. So Harry is eating his stone cold soup,
yeah.
and poor Hedwig is having to endure the same.
Absolutely, poor Hedwig, who has been in a cage for weeks.
Yes,
and like a small cage.
Not good. Not good. Yeah,
bad
yeah.
for birds.
Bad for birds. They need to fly. but then Harry is, as ever, having one of his. And this is honestly like it's kind of that paradox, Dobby's paradox I was talking about at the very beginning, which is basically Harry's having a dream that he's like on a show in a zoo with a card reading underage wizard attached to his cage. People goggle through the bars at him as he lays starving and weak on a bed of straw. And and Dobby's in the crowd. And the basically idea here is that Dobby is like, Harry Potter is safe. And it's like, yeah, but this is not good.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, so maybe he's not in mortal danger anymore, but like, you know,
the quality of life is so low.
There has to be a middle ground between these two particular problems. But then inside of his dreaming, he opens his eyes to see none other than the freckle-faced, red-haired, long-nosed someone. Ron Weasley was outside of Harry's window.
What?
I love it.
Man, tune in next week.
I know. This is a good chapter.
Yeah, the Burrow is a good chapter. That's chapter 3 coming up next week. But man, there you go. That's Dobby's warning. All sorts of shenanigans happening here.
Yes.
My goodness.
I know. Yeah, kind of just like an overall wild chapter, especially when you're just considering like all of the interesting bits of magic in play, both between you know, the house elves and the trace and sort of some of the complicated details attached to those. For the most part, I think a lot of the stuff that happens while we're at the Dursleys, it seems like it usually is like, maybe like a little more flimsy than other aspects of, you know, the overall story. But I think it's sort of because it's like the real mission, the real goal is just to like continuously reinforce just like how miserable he is and just to make him feel as helpless as humanly possible. Because
right.
if you could even get like the slightest like hold on anything, then that's like where Harry would just focus all of his attention. Like, you know, right. it's like at the very least, I could go home and practice magic all summer and get really good at all the skills that I needed to do for year two.
No.
We can't give Harry the opportunity to come into year two and be like well ahead of everybody else. Like,
right. Yeah. Because his torture was like solved by practicing magic.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that will round off chapter two and push us forward. Looking ahead, obviously, as we just said, chapter three and the burrow. Do we have a review?
We absolutely do have a review, Ben, from Keith Creevy 09. Actually gave me a name this time, which I feel like isn't a fake name because it has Creevy in it.
It does.
Like, you know, what a character we'll meet here in a couple chapters. They just say, best podcast out there. Hey, brother. I love to watch your videos on the SCB YouTube channel and couldn't wait when I first heard about the podcast. I love how much detail you guys go into and can't wait for the later books. The episodes probably have to be 2 hours long. Whew, I have wondered about the future books. So, like, the chapters do get a lot longer. We'll see. We do get pretty nitpicky around here, but whatever. It's overall, I love the podcast and hope that you get even higher rankings on those leaderboards, which I didn't get to mention earlier, Ben. This week, we are number one in Macedonia.
Heck yeah.
In entertainment news.
Shout out to Macedonia. Yeah, what's up? Thank you for tuning in.
Entertainment news. That's our sweet spot.
That's it. This is the news.
Welcome to entertainment news through the Gryffindor. And then they had a what if idea. What if Dumbledore never took the cloak from James?
Oh, okay. What if Dumbledore had never taken the cloak from James?
I guess it means that the invisibility cloak remains at the Potters at the time of Voldemort's attack.
Is there a world where James is able to successfully, like
hide Lily and Harry?
Hide feels like the wrong word, but I was going to say just hide himself.
So James, I would count as a true, as like a, I don't know, he's like a true owner of the cloak.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So, and Dumbledore points out that the true power of the cloak is to like shield others or whatever. Ooh. So I can definitely see a world where like James still goes down, but like Lily and Harry survive, I guess.
Okay, that's so interesting. My mind immediately went to like, oh my gosh, is there a world, like a what if that we could do where it's like, what if Harry was raised by James?
Oh my gosh.
And it's just literally like he just has his, oh man, it makes me really sad to think about the prospect of Harry having one of his parents at all. But like, those are very interesting concepts because you could do it either way.
Right.
Like you could have one situation where James, as the true owner of the invisibility cloak, and I mean, really by, I mean, like, you know, like by birthright, but then I think also by intention, would be using the cloak exactly as it was intended to be used.
Right.
Which is to protect others.
From death.
From death. Yeah exactly. And in that way, it would mean, so Harry would be raised by Lily alone, mm-hmm. but then he wouldn't be protected.
He wouldn't be protected. He just wouldn't be found that night. Is that what you're supposed to think? Voldemort just walks around the house like, where are they? God, I thought this was it. Wormtail!
Gosh darn it.
Yeah. That was James Potter over there, right? I killed the right man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. No, that would be super interesting. But that's what I like to imagine. I mean, although to be fair, James doesn't even have, I mean, he has a wand and surely it's in the house, but he is otherwise unarmed when Voldemort enters.
Right.
So I mean, being so caught by surprise, whether or not they would be able to successfully use it.
Right. That's the other thing.
Right. Is a different question entirely. But, if Harry is in his crib already, then the other scenario that you could contemplate would be one where when Harry goes to sleep, he is covered with the invisibility cloak just as like an extra measure. You know, like
every night?
Like every night.
Oh.
Just always. I mean, like, why not? You know, if it's there.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, just like, why not? I guess that would mean, again, it feels, I mean, would Voldemort just doesn't find him at all?
Voldemort wouldn't find him.
Lily could still... This is interesting. Oh, okay, okay. So, could you have a situation where maybe like James is downstairs, doesn't have his wand, doesn't even have the cloak with him.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, the act of Voldemort killing him alerts. I mean, Lily knows that Voldemort's in the house, right?
Yes.
I think like James calls up like, you know, like Lily, it's him or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. So. You could have like Lily cover Harry with the cloak and still choose to die, I guess, right?
Okay.
But then like Harry doesn't have the scar, but still had like whether or not Voldemort attacks him moments later, he still has the protection.
Yeah.
Right. So then later on, you could have Voldemort successfully hit Harry with Avada Kedavra and the spell would just activate, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could have, like, instead of it happening moments later, which is what typically happens, like, I suppose there could be a world where Harry, like, goes to school 10 years later and the first attack is just by Voldemort Prime and he can't, it won't work then. And then at that point in time, Harry's a lot less famous.
Oh, that's true, because if Voldemort doesn't attack Harry, then he doesn't fall. He doesn't lose power. Ooh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that's its own...
Yeah, because so then Voldemort Prime is the one attacking him.
Right. But, this is what happened. When
but the problem will be Harry will have his wand, so it'll do the priori incantatum.
Harry will have his holly wand, which has the twin core,
right,
which would share with Voldemort.
Right. So that would still protect him before Lily's sacrifice.
Oh.
Right?
Dang, that's kind of interesting.
Right.
So then you could like literally have Voldemort Prime attack him on more than one occasion.
Right. I mean, then when you get to the forest, like, what happens? This is tricky. Imagining that they both just have new wands in the forest as usual and nothing else changes and he hits him, then it's like, would Harry die at all? Because Voldemort never would have taken Harry's blood into him, but the protection would still be there from the initial, from Lily's death. So it's like, I think Harry doesn't die at all. This spell just immediately backfires into Voldemort.
Yeah.
Which then is a problem because there is no Horcrux inside of Harry.
There's no Horcrux inside of...
Right.
Yeah, there's no Horcrux inside of Harry, but Nagini would still be alive.
Right.
At that point in time. At least assuming... Every other thing continues to go the same way. Well, but
no, maybe Nagini wouldn't be there because Nagini is part of him hiding in the forest because he falls.
Maybe Nagini wouldn't be there because.
So the other Horcrux would probably be like just another item then. Like, and there's no Nagini at all.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. Because Harry's death was supposed to be the creation of the seventh Horcrux, but Harry never died as a child because Voldemort couldn't find him because he was covered by the invisibility cloak.
Right.
But he's still protected by Lily's sacrificial love protection.
Right. Just unbeknownst to anyone.
So at this point in time, Voldemort basically has to find someone else to create the seventh Horcrux with.
Yep.
So at that point, possibly Dumbledore does more research. I mean, this always.
Or goes maybe back. He just never made the seventh Horcrux because he's still just waiting to find Harry.
Or he's waiting to find Harry.
Yeah.
Oh man, see that could be interesting. Is there a next? Because once again, my mind goes to the Sword of Gryffindor. Because as ever, you know, he's looking to complete.
to complete the set,
which would be like the most Voldemort thing ever to do. But like that, what would be really interesting about that particular situation is that then instead of it being the Elder Wand showing its allegiance to Harry, instead you could have a situation where Voldemort thinks he currently has the Sword of Gryffindor and would go to pull it out, and yet Harry would actually feel it materialize like in his own belt loop or something.
Oh, man.
And then Harry has the Sword of Gryffindor.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be pretty sweet.
That's pretty good.
That would be pretty sweet because that would be the sword would be revealing itself to a true Gryffindor in need, and Harry would be a true Gryffindor in need. Oh, man. Okay. That's kind of fun because then Harry would like literally like double, like he'd have like a wand and a sword in
hand. And a wand.
Which would
be
exactly like Gryffindor himself.
Oh, you're right.
Because that was why he had a sword in the first place.
And then you could even see a situation where like Voldemort, like Avada Kedavra, somebody blocks it with the sword and kills his own Horcrux. Right?
Man.
Man, it's pretty good. And then, I don't know, he would destroy that one, and then he'd get all upset, and then he would attack Harry again, but now Harry just takes the blow for real, but it doesn't matter because the sacrificial protection's there, and then Voldemort just backfires it into himself.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There we go. Well, that was a great question.
Man, that was a good question. That was a fun ride for me.
I know. I was like, wait.
Hopefully that came across as organic. That was all just completely on the fly, but that was pretty fun. I love it. And the Sword of Gryffindor is one of those artifacts that I'm just positively obsessed with.
Oh, yeah. It's a very good one.
So cool. So anyway, yes, absolutely great question. In the future, if you too would like to both leave a review and also tuck a little question inside of there, we would love that. And we will attempt to read it and answer it here at the end of one of our shows.
We sure will. God, that one just feels like it could be a video at some point. Just there you go. What if James had the invisibility cloak?
Yes.
There you go. I mean, I'd click it.
Me too.
All right. Well, you guys, thank you so much. And especially thanks to Keith Creevy there for his excellent what if suggestion. Otherwise, I think that's going to do it for us here for Chapter 2 of Chamber of Secrets. Join us next time for Chapter 3, The Burrow Through the Gryffindor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.